This is a special episode of the 16-9 podcast. Just before Christmas, I moderated an Advocates for Connected Experiences roundtable that tossed around thoughts on what technologies were used to get us all through 2020, focusing on what really worked and will continue to work into 2021. It was a video discussion on Zoom, but it translates nicely to audio. I had technical issues with the planned podcast for this week, but this is a worthwhile, albeit last-minute, stand-in. The first voice you hear is Kim Cerubi, one of the founders of Advocates of Connected Experiences, or ACE. Also on the discussion, Joey Lloyd from Avixa, Kim Frank from Geopath, Beth Warren from CRI and the DSF, Sibel Jones from SEGD, Brian Mazaros from OpenEye Global, Asif Khan from the Location-Based Marketing Association, and myself. This podcast is produced with the kind, ongoing support of ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Get awesome-looking, engaging, and automated subscription content for your screens.
Hello, everyone. Thank you again for joining ACE, Advocates for Connected. I'm Kim Cerubi, the chairwoman. We're going to just go around real quick, and everyone can introduce themselves. Today, we're going to be talking about technologies that have been used through COVID, what has worked, what hasn't, what do we see is going to be taking us into 2021. So Dave, I will hand it over to you and then you could go around the table with introduce themselves.
Sure. I'm Dave Haynes. I'm the editor of 16-9, which is a blog I've been writing forever about digital signage. I also do a lot of consulting in that industry, working with end users and vendors, and I, in the past year or so, seem to be doing an endless amount of moderating of these sorts of things. And on this one, our first guest is Joey Lloyd from Avixa. Joey, do you want to kind of explain what you're all about?
Oh, well, hey there. My name is Joey Lloyd, as Dave so kindly said, and I am the Senior Director of Communications for Avixa, the Audiovisual Integrated Experience Association. And we are the industry org for all things AV. And it has definitely been a up and down crazy year, but we're excited to continue to be involved with ACE and all the great people on the call today.
Kim Frank.
Hi, Dave, and hi, everybody. This is Kim Frank. I work for Geopath. We are a nonprofit industry association that is responsible for measuring the number of people who come into contact with out-of-home advertising. Thanks for having me today.
Nice. And you not only work for Geopath, you run Geopath.
I do.
Let's clarify that. Beth Warren from CRI and the Digital Signage Federation.
Hey, Beth Warren. I'm with Creative Realities and I run marketing for our digital signage company. And I preside over our retail practice. So in doing that, we help end users, brands, and in my case, retailers, create connected experiences around human-centric behaviors.
All right, Brian Mazaros, who I think you have a paper route for the Bergen County Record, right?
Exactly. It's a Jersey roots now.
Yeah. OpenEye Global.
OpenEye Global. So I run experience design agency called OpenEye Global, and also on the board of directors for SEGD.
And speaking of SEGD, the CEO.
Hi, thanks, Dave. I'm Sibel Jones, and I'm the CEO of SEGD, which is a nonprofit organization of designers that are working at the intersection of the physical and digital realm. And we're all about communication and design and in space, and just happy to have ACE this year as a way to kind of be able to commiserate with peers around hot topics. So thanks to Dave and the team for pulling this all together.
All right, so we've had an interesting year. We've had a number of these roundtables, and I've spent a lot of time talking to people online about 2020 and everything that's happened and what technologies have been brought to bear to kind of deal with the change, particularly in retailing and access to public venues. And I'm really curious to hear from everybody. What do you think has really kind of caught on versus stuff that maybe we all thought was going to be a big deal and maybe did not after all? And I know from my own experience when COVID hit, I was thinking in terms of, well, this is the end of touchscreens. Nobody's going to use touchscreens for the next year and a half or whatever it may be. reality is, if you talk to the manufacturers and you see the research, touchscreen usage and buying has actually gone up, because what it does is it allows you to be somewhat contactless. Maybe you are contacting a touchscreen, but you know, you can clean off your hands after that, but it means you're not talking to a sales associate or at an order counter where you're 3 feet away. So Beth Warren, I know that you suggested this as a topic. So what have you seen?
I've seen so much, and all of it really good. I think that what will stick, what's here to stay, is click and collect. I do buy online, pick up in store, buy online, pick up curbside. I do, because number one, if you don't have to go into stores and you can have all that done for you, why not? So the convenience factor has really, I think, enabled a lot of digital acceleration. So from that perspective, I think that's only going to continue, and it's going to get less and less, there's going to be less and less friction associated with that. And I do think that there's a wide open space too for companies like ours in the digital world to be able to facilitate that, you know, even more so than perhaps we have. Just mm-hmm.
The whole curbside.
Yeah, go ahead.
The curbside pickup thing is interesting. That's something that's been around for decades, really. I can remember groceries having that sort of thing and having lanes where you'd pick up, and they came and they went. They never really stuck for various reasons. What's different about 2020, other than, you know, the really obvious crazy things that have happened, but why is it now sticking? Because it was convenient before too.
I think that the mobile technology has improved. I think the back-end systems between e-commerce and mobile have significantly you know, accelerated in terms of functionality and performance. And I think it just makes it that much easier for people to feel good about it. And, you know, as we speak, there, you know, companies, retailers are improving on sort of two things, which are indicators of its ability to sort of stick, which is making sure that the order is correct and making sure that the wait time is minimal. So as accuracy improves and as wait times decrease, that just fuels this, you know, this convenience even more so. So okay. I think that's going to, you know, have a real knock-on effect on utility for that and people's reception to that experience.
Asif Khan has joined us from the Location-Based Marketing Association. Asif, you can email me your excuse later, but do you want to introduce yourself a little bit more?
Sure, yeah. I'm Asif. I head up the Location-Based Marketing Association. So it's, you know, there's been a lot of interesting movement within our member base over the last few months, driven off of COVID. Many pivots within the vendor community to provide services on everything from, you know, using a lot of the Bluetooth technologies that are central to the location and geo world for tracking and indoors and employee, you know, sort of movement understanding and social distancing measurements and all kinds of things like that. And then, you know, other technologies, be it facial recognition or, you know, some of the other, you know, sort of COVID screening type of things that are happening. We're seeing a lot of that within our, you know, our member base globally. And we're a very global organization. Obviously, we have operations in 30 plus countries. So it progresses at different rates, depending on where you are and what the rules are. You know, we're based in Canada, where there's a fairly consistent set of government rules across the country that are, you know, in place to try and, you know, for example, screening of everybody coming into a bar or restaurant or store is required pretty much across the country. Whereas obviously in the US, that's not the case. And, you know, so we're seeing just so many different things happen, and our members are, you know, some are doing really well and have, you know, really benefited in some ways from COVID in terms of new product launches, and we're taking existing technologies and accelerating them, like on the payment side. and others are really struggling where they've, you know, been maybe only on the advertising side of the of our business, and you know that ad revenue has, I won't say it's dried up, but it's been paused, let's call it, until next year. So
you I suspect wake up every day thinking and worrying about how do these different channels start to merge with one another, and when's that point going to happen when smartphones are really integrated with displays and with other technologies? Has 2020 and everything that's happened, this whole push to accelerate digital transformation, really made that happen for the smartphone side of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think for sure, we're seeing, you know, somebody was, Beth was talking about click and collect and kind of how that's all evolving. You know, we're seeing, you know, many of our members, especially in the restaurant and retail sector, you know, are embracing smartphone as the device that sort of initiates that order or that request or that, you know, pickup or that notification or that payment transaction or what have you. So it is coming together. I think there's still a ways to go in terms of connecting that phone to the digital signage platform, you know, as you walk by, or personalizing content, or, you know, things like that. We're not quite there yet. The other interesting thing is for us at the LBMA, we cover all media. So television, print, radio, all of it, you know, cause they can all be local or location based, you know, in different aspects. And one of the interesting things, we're about to release our 2020 research study on tomorrow, in fact. But one of the pieces that we've seen in there over this whole COVID time is a rise in spending on radio and print. Just massive, you know, local flyers are all of a sudden, you know, big again. People have time to sit there and flip through paper. You know, so it's interesting, while the digital acceleration is happening, in some ways old school is back.
Local is a trend that I think also
local overall. Yeah, so
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, we hear that too.
Kim, your organization is all about analytics and analyzing audience behaviors and consumer behaviors and movement and so on. What have you seen happening as the importance or the perspective on analytics changed in the past year or being changed by 2020?
Certainly data has become incrementally more important. And I think to the earlier point, local has become incredibly important because we've all experienced this in very different ways, and every market has handled things differently and every market has been impacted differently and at different times. So I think from a mobility standpoint, that's been really very fascinating to watch. For those of us who are in the New York area, we were hit really hard very early and went into lockdown and kind of haven't really come out. And then there's other markets in the country where they have not had much change to the lifestyle. They're still traveling, they're still going to work. And so we expect to see an ebb and flow of that as, you know, the next 6 months comes out. But then as, you know, we start to see vaccines really take hold, we expect there to be a return to normalcy over the second half of next year. So definitely looking forward to a little bit more of return to normalcy. But I do think that, you know, as consumers, especially those of us in the areas that have been significantly impacted, it's been a time of experimentation for us. We were never big users of things like DoorDash or you know, all of these different apps to get things delivered, or having groceries delivered to our homes and trying like Misfits markets to get our, you know, vegetables and fruits. And so I think, you know, there's a lot of that is going to stick even after we're able to go to a supermarket and pick out our own vegetables and fruits and things along those lines. Obviously, some of that will be pared back, but some of it will stick. Certainly, there's been growing importance in the gig economy of deliveries and things like that. I think we also, as consumers, start to expect a little bit more of a curated and personal experience. So I think that's going to be very exciting for a lot of us as we come out of, you know, that this quarantined atmosphere that we're in is, you know, maybe we don't want to go anymore into a store where there's crowds and tons of people. Maybe we want, even if we don't have to worry about there being some kind of contagion, we just maybe don't want to be in that environment anymore. and are open to paying more to have a more personalized, curated experience, because that's kind of what we've gotten used to over the last 9-10 months.
So Bill and Brian, you guys think a lot about experiential design, and you have a member organization full of people who, you know, worry about that every day. Are they having to rethink or kind of reimagine how they deliver experience?
Yeah, I mean, I was building on what Kim was saying. I think, you know, the museum industry certainly has taken a big hit this year, but thinking about the curation, if you think about going to like a Blockbuster at the Met or something and having to wait in line and you know, and then wait your turn in queue just to get in front of an object or artifact. So that's all moving. I think there is that sense of, you know, you have a more curated personal experience in places that you could never do that before. And so that's certainly a trend. Financially, how they balance that out, I don't think they've gotten to that yet, but there is, you know, there's moving towards this kind of hybrid. So some people be able to have that experience in person, but then how can you have a platform to have some of those experiences, you know, virtually and digitally? So I think we are being forced, and I'm just talking right now in the museum industry, and Brian can talk, you know, maybe more in the and digital communication specifically, but I think they've been more on the traditionalist side, even though they're moving into interactivity. The other thing is gesture technology. And that was really, you know, that was definitely being developed in museums, but now with people being adverse to touching things, and, you know, we've worked so hard on getting touchable experiences in museums. And now it's like, we have to do the opposite. But I do think that gesture technology, personalization, whether that's through QR, RFID, your own phone. Nobody wants to download an app just to do an experience. So museums are really advancing that technology. And our designers, I think many of them were pushing their clients to move that way. And now the clients are realizing that this is something that they need to integrate anyway.
Yeah, I think just building off of that, I think you can't kind of ignore some other technologies that have been around, but I think matured during this period. I think one of them is AR. I think that has been a technology that I think a lot had sort of looked at it. I don't want to say the word slapstick, but just not a lot of emphasis on it. And I think, you know, in museums and themed entertainment and other, you know, space and other public environments to where you can, you know, allow people to view a different perception of the space without having to touch it or to, you know, just have to wait in line to see an artifact. I mean, there's those opportunities. And I mean, that extends even into retail. You know, there's a lot more retailers that took those technologies more serious than before, even into out of home, I think, during this period. But it all goes back to that sort of frictionless experience. You know, I think, you know, Sibel was right. Gesture is definitely was something that people were thinking about even prior to COVID. You know, unfortunately, the disadvantage was these environments were not deemed essential as retail was. And so they were shut down. It did create an opportunity for a lot to experiment if, you know, if they had the financial means to do that. But I think when they do reopen, you know, I think these experiences are what visitors are going to expect. And I also think digital signage plays a role in that too. I mean, not to undersell that too, because you do have, you know, this opportunity for, you know, visual storytelling, which was a key component to a lot of museums as well. And you have to cater to not one-to-one, but one-to-many. And depending upon how you do it or position it, it, you know, creates that opportunity. I mean, same with, I think, you know, AR and gesture. I mean, gesture probably the exception, but AR, I mean, it's, you got multiple people engaging with an artifact and being able to keep distance by using their phone as a device. So I think those are, you know, some interesting trends to see as they continue to take shape heading to next year.
It's an interesting time though, because you're all talking about these technologies and curated experiences and everything else, and being brought to operators of venues, whether they're retail or museums or whatever it may be, at a time when, unless you're a grocer or a DIY store, you probably had a really crappy year. And you know, your budgets have been trimmed and everything else. So how do you balance making these new investments, not only in capital costs, but the resources to make them happen and maybe a third party to deploy and everything else when your budgets are being trimmed?
Yeah, that's a good, I'll take a stab at this one first. That's a good question because I sort of wondered that myself. There's a couple of clients that we have that are just putting capital into properties for next year. And I wonder too, like, why are you doing that after such a bad year where you got beat up? And some of it is the mentality of the great reopening. Some of it is we want to be the first out, or we want to deliver on this promise that we've established with our clients during lockdown that we, you know, promoted or talked about on social, that it's a safe environment, it's engaging, it's unique, and they want to be one that come out and I don't know if the word is innovator is the best word to use, but I think they want to be one to show that they're willing to, you know, invest in, you know, continuing that relationship they have with their customers before everything shut down. So plus also you got to look at it too. I mean, I think a lot of those capital budgets were then put on hold and the money's still there and it just gets, you know, fortunately rolled over into next year. Not, that's not the case for everyone, even on the theme entertainment side. I think just some are fiscally smart and some of them have some really good, you know, creatives that are behind the scenes that are thinking like that, but it's a mixed bag.
If people can't come to the store, taking the store to the home is, you know, part and parcel to giving augmented reality and other types of experiences, virtual try-on and such, a new role in the promise of retail and being able to continue, you know, building relationships with folks who aren't quite ready to come back in and browse. So it has, I think, a real role at home as opposed to putting augmented reality or virtual reality in the store context. So that's how we've been sort of guiding clients. And as far as the sales associates are concerned, to answer your question too, Dave, is redeploying them in new ways to make them valuable. Because if folks aren't coming in, how can the sales associate then build relationships with their, you know, customer base proactively at home, whether it be, you know, FaceTime or Zoom sessions? Verizon is doing a really, really good job of redeploying their in-store staff to be able to handle the, you know, sort of telecommunications, if you will. And we've seen some fashion retailers do that also, back to the notion about building community and making sure those relationships and value, you know, their promise and value propositions stick with the community while people aren't shopping in the sort of local stores at this point. So I think those are ways that retailers at least are finding additional efficiencies in some of these technologies.
And I just wanted to add something to that. So what we're seeing here, so Tennessee hasn't really shut down much. And what I found is that some places are adding a COVID compliance fee or whatever you want to call it per ticket. So, and people seem to be fine paying that. And it could go from everything from how they clean to the technology they're putting in. And I know that it was I'm pretty sure it was the state of New York that passed that said restaurants were allowed to add a certain dollar amount to each, you know, ticket.
Transaction?
This was at restaurants in New York. However, this is being done in retail in Florida. It's being done in Tennessee. And just adding really everything from 25 cents to a dollar, I've seen up to a dollar per ticket in some locations. And when you look at, I know a restaurant in particular, you know, they're seeing 5,000 tickets a week in some locations. That could be a big number that could help you to put a lot of technology and safety precautions in place so that when people are coming back into the restaurant at that level, everything's already there.
Joey, AV touches all of these things that we're talking about. And I know Avixa has a research team and you spend a lot of time talking to and monitoring the sentiment and the activity of the industry. Are there certain technologies that have done better than other ones through 2020 and have a, you know, maybe a brighter outlook for 21?
I think overall what we're hearing from our members and what we're seeing has more to do in the corporate space and the education space than it in retail. I think, you know, at the beginning of the year, as we sort of settled in with COVID, we thought we were going to see these hybrid displays that had hand sanitizer and temperature checks and sort of all of this crazy futuristic stuff. And although we've heard about it, we really haven't seen a lot of it in actual implementation. But in the corporate environment, it's been figuring out how to deal with this new hybrid workforce. And we've got so many people working from home and will continue to work from home, you know, especially when we look at those Fortune 500s. And so it's the technologies that are sort of re-outfitting and figuring out how do we handle this work from home workforce that we now have? How do we keep them engaged? And so a ton of investment across unified communications. I mean, just thinking, you know, all of us sitting today on Zoom, we're all sitting from our homes, you know, getting ready for the holidays and creating those environments. And the same in education, both K-12 and higher ed, in figuring out how they can deal with bringing students back, what are the next steps and what are the technologies there. So although it's been spotty across the board and it's been a tough year, there are some bright points in areas like that.
And one of the things I read recently that I found quite interesting is, particularly for retail, is if you work in retail, your job is probably, or there's a decent chance that it's changed in the past year. I was particularly intrigued by Best Buy, which is redesigning a whole bunch of their stores so that they have much larger areas allocated for packaging, staging, and fulfillment of click and collect stuff that Beth was referencing earlier, that they need to set aside part of their physical footprint of their store just for that. And there are store staff who maybe aren't talking to customers. They're like moving stuff out and getting ready for people who show up in a pickup lane or whatever it may be. So it's the whole idea of experience for retailing and experience as a worker has changed.
Yeah, I think this is a time where we've all just gotten really lean and resourceful and scrappy and been open to experiments and changing the way we've done things and thinking outside of the box because we've been allowed to. So, you know, I think that really spans the gamut. And even when we think about our office spaces, right? I mean, we have office space. A lot of us have longer term leases. Even reimagining what do we use all of our office square footage as? Mm-hmm. If the staff isn't in every day. I know it's something that we're thinking about with our own space. If we do have more remote work, we still have all that square footage. Do we repurpose it for better usage? Does it become bigger meeting space? Does it become more communal space? Does it become, you know, a place where we can come together for experiences? Same thing in the stores. I think it's just the scrappy have survived through this. You know, and we've leaned on our ability to be resourceful, to pivot, you know, that the Association of National Advertisers declared pivot the marketing word of the year this week. And we've all done a bit of that. And I think it will continue. And we've been given permission to do that, which is kind of refreshing, I think, permission to kind of reset.
Yeah, I think it's really sparked for the right. And, you know, we're a design community, but the creativity that we're seeing and, you know, for us, what's exciting is the international aspect of that. So we're able to, you know, get people to speak that we could never have come and join because they would be limited, you know, feeling obliged to get on a flight and, you know, the cost of that. And, you know, our events are so exciting because we have people joining from India and South Africa and South America and Asia. And so I think, and the question I think at the beginning was, what will we keep? I think we want to keep that, you know, that sense of being connected, and whether that's, you know, your design community or retail. I think people are discovering new brands. They're discovering the ones that are evolving and experimenting and getting engaged in that. And so I think that kind of ups the ante for all of us, is that we now see a different kind of exposure within our communities that allow us to experiment and to also, gain a different kind of exposure if we're doing the right thing.
I've been curious, and I'm interested in hearing from you guys, what the impact of all of this video calling that we're doing might be in physical premises, like a store or a museum or whatever it may be. I know going back 15 years, I saw demos of displays where you could click on something and it opened a video session with a remote advisor at a bank or something like that. And I thought, this is interesting, but broadband wasn't quite there yet. The cost of it was incredibly high. But now we've trained even our grandparents in their 80s or 90s to use Skype and to do video calls and everything else. They're comfortable enough now that they can push a button without worrying something's going to explode. And what that means when you get into a DIY store or even a museum or exhibit of some kind, if you could click on something and open a session and talk to somebody on the other side of the state or the planet who could give you expert level advice on these things, would that not be attractive? And is that something that we're now ready for?
I think absolutely. I know that we were doing virtual learning with some museums that were really forward thinking. And so I think what scares me, I think the most in the future, is what does hybrid look like? Because we know that we like curated when we're in person, and we know that we can expand our dialogue when we're virtual. But, I'm more worried about, does hybrid deliver for people, where some people are present and other people are not? So it's kind of, what I'm interested in and in looking towards. I know there have been some hybrid experiences, but I think this is going to be something that we're going to be looking at because of that, Dave, because we don't want to lose that connectivity that we have in the virtual realm, but people are going to be anxious to physically get back in spaces that they want to be in.
Mm-hmm. That's a really valuable point that you bring up there. Particularly we look at trade shows where Avixa lives and plays, and it's really the question. We've figured out how to, get the education and the content across, and we figured out how to create these chat rooms and get people to interact. And really the next step is, okay, how do you connect the speaker to, the person who is sitting at home, and how did they re-engage back with that in-person audience? And I think that's the place where we're going to have to figure out these things across not only trade shows, but all of these experiences. I mean, I hear you talking about museums, and I think, do I want to go into a physical place to have to interact virtually? I don't know. That's an interesting question on a very personal level.
But I think it's been interesting this time too, in museums, aquariums. I mean, how many, I know children, yeah, but I know a lot of other ones that have put their kids on and seen virtual sessions at the San Diego Zoo. And you got to look at those kind of environments. And in some sense, they've grown their audience, if they were smart, during this. And, it's not like we can always just jump on a plane and go to some of these aquariums, especially the ones that are down in Australia. There's been some great online experiences. So, does it stay? I think it does for a bit. I think it's opened up this opportunity for you to experience and educate some and be educated on something that you probably will never have a chance to go to. But on the other side, is it an authentic experience? No, because you're not touching it, you're not smelling it, you're not hearing the sounds, and you're not seeing all of that. So I think it kind of goes back onto the environment, on how do you curate or keep that audience that you've established during this time, because you still want your brand recognized globally, but then you also want to, have people, you don't want to disconnect with that local community that is, that has that opportunity to come in person. It's a very hard balancing act. You still want that audience that you have globally, but at the same time too, you don't want to make it overly convenient for someone that is a few miles away just to stay at their house. You do want them to come in and have the ability to touch and interact and really experience
you know, that that artifact or that exhibit.
Mm-hmm. There's a question of how engaged are people too in those environments. You know, when you're in person, there's a certain forced level of engagement. When you're at an event, when you're at a convention, when you're at an expo hall, when you're at a museum, because you're there and present in the moment, there's the ability to multitask and check out and not pay attention and get distracted. And I think this specifically for K through 12 schools, I mean, I've complained about this ad nauseum, but my kids are home, the schools are closed. The experience for a six-year-old virtually is not the same as an experience for a six-year-old in the classroom. And I do worry about that level of detachment. For those of us who have events, you know, that being there in person does provide an incremental layer of engagement that you just cannot duplicate in a hybrid environment.
Asif, one of the things that other folks have talked about is the idea of things like click and collect and other experiences that for them to work, they need to be seamless. They need to be frictionless. And that somehow means that all the different channels and technologies that are brought to bear, like retail systems and so on, all work together with a smartphone. Are we in a better place than we were, you know, even a couple of years ago in terms of the ability to stitch all these things together and makes and the sort of thing like curbside pickup truly seamless, where you just kind of they know when you're arriving because there's GPS reading that your car or your device, all those sorts of things? Or is it still much easier to say you can make something frictionless than to actually pull it off?
Sorry, I think there's still a long way to go, but I think great strides have been made in the last number of months. And, you know, we've seen, you know, all sorts of retailers really adopt technologies that, you know, they weren't even thinking about, you know, maybe 6-7 months ago, that bring some of these things together and make it seamless. So the idea of, you know, if we look at a brand like Starbucks that was, you know, a very forward thinker on this type of technology in terms of, you know, you have the app, you place the order from home, you know, it knows where you are, a la sort of reverse Uber lookup kind of thing. And when you walk into that, you know, that location, you know, it's already sent the information that you're 2 minutes away and the barista starts preparing the coffee and it's delivered, you know, and ready as soon as you walk in to pick it up, and it's already paid for through the app. So in that sense, you know, it's coming together and it's frictionless and it's easy. And we're seeing many, many more retailers and restaurant chains start to embrace that, driven off of COVID. But I think, you know, the other part of it is that where there's still a lot of opportunity is on the data side of things. A lot of the data is still very siloed. Like, you know, the transaction data is kept in, you know, you got platforms like Squirrel and Micros and all these guys doing their thing, you know, with the transaction data. And then you've got, like, in on our side, you got the location visit data, you know, in a different system over here. And then you've got, you know, sort of the ad activation piece in a whole separate system and looking at the attribution and the measurement of whether that works. So in that sense, it's not really connected yet. And I think there's still a ton of opportunity around that. And I think what we're seeing now is a lot of the artificial intelligence efforts that are happening are really being oriented around bringing some of those data systems together to uncover new insights by kind of linking the data together.
I think that's what holds back brick and mortar, Dave, is those legacy systems that are difficult, that are siloed and hard to bring together. But there's been amazing strides in software platforms that plug in and allow those systems to talk better with one another. So we can improve attributes that are important to satisfaction, and utilizing these experiences, you know, natively. So yeah. I'm hopeful. Are you hopeful, Asif?
I'm extremely hopeful, but I think the challenge is that it's not just about connecting the data together. I think that's still a hurdle. And I think, you know, we're getting to the point, I think it's getting easier and the connectors are being built. But the problem is the interpretation of that data. It's not good enough to say, okay, now all the data talks to one another and it's all in one system. Great. Well, who's going to tell me what to do with that data now? Where's the ability to act upon it and the interpretation of it? The data analyst is still the missing gap in every business out there today in terms of acting on that data. We, separate from the LBMA, I run an AI company, and the number one thing we hear from customers over and over again is, don't give me more data. We have lots of data. Tell me what to do with this data. How do I actually act on it? How to move my bottom line? And, so they're looking for you to interpret it. And that's where the AI systems start to make sense, I think, because if you can make those investments and have the machine sort of, interpret masses and volumes of data, and then spit out, actionable, engagement that you can take from it, I think that's where you're going to see acceleration.
I'm curious about what was referenced earlier about local businesses. And it's one thing for a Starbucks or a Lowe's or Home Depot or Walmart, whoever it may be, to put all these systems together and deliver a seamless experience or whatever it may be. What about the local businesses? What can they realistically do to improve how they deliver without, taking on board that they just don't have that kind of a budget or internal resources or experience to do, something particularly sophisticated?
They have the people, and it's the most important part. I think Beth and Asif both talked about this a lot in terms of e-commerce has been preparing for seamless brick and mortar online delivery and store pickup, all of that for years. But it's the major e-commerce platforms that are doing it and the major retailers that have access to it. And even those major retailers trying to figure out, their multiple stores and how they deal with delivery has been an issue for years and years. The small retailers, the local mom and pops and storefronts, they have something that a Target, a Best Buy, a Home Depot will never have. And that is a really amazing engaged sales associate. And no harm, no foul to Target, but I don't go there because I want to talk to somebody. I go there because it's convenient. I go to my local boutique because they know me and they communicate with me and they call me and they text me and I have that one-to-one relationship. And everything that Beth talked about in terms of those interpersonal relationships and the changes that sales associates have gone through, that's where they have the upper hand.
Interesting.
Well, like appointment setting, and other service experiences that allow both personalization, intimacy, local, feeling, that local experience to really remain intact. So the smaller mom and pops are able to be really nimble that way. They know their customers, they can call them, they can book in time with them, and they can provide them with curated products that are available to them both on their website and through one-on-one connection.
So something that's relentlessly automated and almost anonymous in terms of, let's say like a Target where you can just pull into your parking stall and there's somebody there waiting with the goods and they throw it in the back and you're out of there. That's probably the opposite of what you want to do if you're a local retailer, because you want that personalized local or one-to-one touch, right?
Absolutely. And they're able to do it. They're able to wrap your gifts. They're able to make customized, concessions and be able to adapt quickly. Which is wonderful. It's just the total opposite of what you experience in anything that scales so massively.
Mm-hmm. Your company, Beth, has, I think there was a recent, because you're a listed company, there's the CEO gets on and has to talk to investors about what's going on and everything else. And somebody sent me an email and said, you should look at this because these guys actually appear to be selling these thermal sensors and moving a lot of them out the door. Because I've heard from other companies who said, nobody's buying them, or they really haven't caught on. So why is this happening? Is that accurate, and why is it happening?
It is accurate. And it's, we pivoted and we committed to it and we put all of our focus and energy around it. That's why. We've also changed up how we are going to market. So we're not going directly necessarily to end users. We're utilizing our partners as a strategy from distributors and other resellers. So it's opened up avenues for us to work with folks that we haven't worked with in the past. Does that make sense? Because they might have been considered competitive. So we're doing things in new ways. I'm not gonna sort of mislead and, you know, suggest that we have, you know, endless marketing dollars, because we don't, but we're strategic about the way in which we're doing B2B. So, but it's worked for us. We've also made, we've also expanded on the thermal mirror, and we've included mobile applications for QA surveys. We have a digital signage component because communications is critical in establishing and elevating the confidence levels, et cetera. So we've wrapped it in sort of a whole, in a total solution. So it's not just temperature taking.
Has that been a big part of it, is to come up with something that has a life after COVID?
Yes, sir, it has. So that it's future proofed, you know, that we're able to utilize components of it in different ways and for different reasons.
Yeah. Does that make sense? Completely agree with that last comment about, you know, sort of building technology that has a life after COVID. And to your earlier question, Dave, about the affordability of some of these solutions for, you know, local businesses, smaller businesses, like in my other company, Ground Level, like we, our whole local AI platform is really targeted at, you know, those small and medium sized businesses. We've got like 2000, you know, barber shops and hair salons and, you know, car dealerships and whatnot using this platform. And what it does is it helps them understand from a geo perspective, who's coming into their, you know, their store or their business, but where else those people go that might be complementary businesses that they could be partnering up with. And when you, and in COVID times, when foot traffic is down across the board in all sectors right now, one of the ways you can rise out of that is by partnering up with other businesses that have, you know, commonality between, you know, your customer base. So people who come to my, you know, hair salon, who also happen to spend time at this local coffee shop, if the coffee shop and the hair salon partner together, who are both local businesses, and they have common customers, and you can identify who those customers are, and you can reach out and market to those customers, both businesses can rise together. And that's one of the things that we're seeing, one of the biggest use cases we're seeing out of our platform right now. And obviously that has life well beyond COVID. It's not just a COVID thing. From a, you know, sort of affordability point of view, I mean, we sell that platform at $350 a month. So
interesting. I would not have thought of barbershops as being a kind of a vertical market for AI.
Yeah, but like, I mean, we've got like, I mean, you name it, like there's every kind of business that you can think of, from restaurants and, you know, small boutique hotels and whatever that are using this kind of platform right now. So
one of the other things that was suggested would be a big deal in 2020 because of everything that was going on was the use of voice. And it's another thing that, while many of us have personal assistants, I've got one sitting right here, I've not run into it much in public places at all. And am I just not seeing it, or am I live in Nova Scotia, so we just got running water last year, so maybe that's why. But is there more out there than I think?
I think you're underselling Nova Scotia, by the way.
Just, yeah, it's beautiful.
I love going to Halifax.
Halifax.
We're trying to keep you away. There's nothing here. We just got power.
You're doing a good job of it right now.
Voice is such a personal thing, right? Because I mean, it's such a home technology right now, but so pervasive. You know, we used to joke 5-10 years ago about our kids trying to touch the TV and not understanding why the TV wasn't responding when they would touch it. And I think that's the new voice now, is, you know, my 6-year-old wants to talk to everything in our house, but there's still that divide when you're out in public that you're talking
to things. It's just, I don't think it's really reached that scale where it's socially acceptable to be talking at things while you're out and about.
There's also interference too. You know, there's ambient noise in the background, which makes it really hard for, you know, waking up those responsive devices. So there's some technical stuff that has to be worked out. But I think it's a wonderful idea, and I hope that we hear more of it and see more of it.
Yeah, it's interesting. We just did a feature. One of our members just opened the first voice-activated museum in Washington, D.C. called Planet Word. And, you know, we were so excited to see more gesture technology, but people being able to use their voice to activate. And then you can speak in different languages and you can access things. So it's, I think we're just at the beginning of that. Certainly remember when, I mean, I worked on projects with RFID and they would say, well, how can you identify one person from the other? You know, that technology will get better. We won't have voices competing. I think it's really what's the right kind of engagement. But all of this, I think we're not going to want to go back to, I just saw in our area of DC, they're going to do on-demand parking cost. So think now when we go back to some sense of normalcy, we're going to want to know where we can park. We're going to not want to have to wait in line for our groceries. I mean, all of these things that used to be, I think people wouldn't do them because they weren't sure about them, or they might have had, you know, too many add-on costs. We're not going to go back. I mean, that time, we're going to love saving that time and actually getting exactly what we want. So I think this is just going to continue to move forward.
What do you guys see happening that's different in 2021, technology that's really going to take hold or change the way things are happening? I'll give you a second to think about it. For me, I'm seeing direct view LED really, really accelerating in terms of adoption. And instead of it just being something that you would find in flagship locations, very high profile locations, they're showing up in bars. I wrote a piece about a bar in Green Bay, Wisconsin that had a very large kind of overhead display above a bar that was fine pitch and everything else. Would have cost a lot of money, but now it's getting mainstream to a point where you're finding that kind of technology all over the place. And I think that'll just continue to accelerate in 21. Who wants to be a soothsayer?
Oh, I'll go out there. The one that's going to be interesting to watch, I think, is Amazon. Their just walk out technology. I mean, obviously, they're still testing it in the grocery. Mm-hmm. There's been some articles I've seen that popped up and some other ones that have looked at it for adoption. I think that kind of goes back, obviously, to the frictionless trend that we've all been talking about. But I think they're interesting. The one, I mean, it's a love-hate relationship I think we all have with Amazon. But I think for what they've been experimenting with and what that capability is, it's certainly very much on trend, and I can see a lot more retailers and even museum environments or so just embracing that, because it just makes it easier for you to come and go without having to worry to go into your wallet and just, you know, track that purchase or that interaction.
I want it for Costco. No big damn line. You just pick up what you want.
I mean, it's the beauty of it. You don't have to stand behind and watch something, especially now. It's the convenience factor of it. I don't have to stand behind someone and watch someone struggle at the self-checkout. I just want to strangle them sometimes. I didn't say that.
I have a prediction. So we have Uber Eats. I think we'll have Uber Shop. That's my prediction.
I think we do. I've noticed that Instacart now delivers Sephora and PetSmart. It's happening, and it's starting to really become a thing. I think it's moving beyond Amazon. It's moving beyond Amazon Prime and the things you can get there. It's go to that store and pick up that thing.
I do. I think Uber will get more into that business. I think we're going to see more from Uber in that area.
I think there'll be like the WeWorks will stop be about space sharing and they'll start being about time sharing. So maybe I only need an office for 2 days a month. I don't need a tenth of an office. I just need a tenth of the time. So there'll be more of that. I think there'll be an investment in more outdoor technology and outdoor spaces at locations. Now that we've explored what it's like to have lunches on the sidewalk, I think that people actually enjoyed that quite a bit, specifically in markets where it's, you know, not where we're about to get 2 feet of snow today. And I think there's like an investment now in the home as a destination. You know, I haven't been spending my money on Starbucks, so I was more inclined to buy the Nespresso machine that I had been neglecting myself of. So making your home more tech savvy in line with something more commercial, I think might be some place where we're investing dollars both inside the home, but then also in our yards and patios and porches and places where we've grown more accustomed to spending time given what's happened over the last year.
Yeah, I agree, Kim. I see that our field of design is going to move into, you know, we've always been about placemaking, but I really feel like communicating, responding to people in outdoor environments through digital means is going to continue to grow because people are enjoying that it's a different kind of feeling, it's different sense, whether that's, you know, nighttime lighting experiences that you can share with your family, where you're socially distanced. I mean, I think people really are enjoying that. And it's a new kind of entertainment that, you know, was around, but people are really embracing that. So I think that hopefully with the lack of people spending a lot of time in our urban centers, that that will activate these centers in a different way. So you're seeing people transforming things that were, you know, before it was just a plaza, now it becomes a movie theater, you know, those and, you know, kind of how we do even music and things like that is really going to evolve. And so I see a lot of excitement around that.
Yeah. All right. And then from my side, I think one of the biggest things that we're seeing already that I think will really manifest in 2021 is sort of the blending of health tech and retail and location and mobile tech coming together. You know, for example, Delta, you know, made an announcement the other day that you know, getting ready for sort of COVID vaccine passports, these kinds of things, and how those kinds of technologies are going to play into whether you're allowed into a store or not allowed into a store, or, you know, to travel or not to travel. You know, like just, you know, the awareness of somebody's health status, and how that's going to play into, you know, how we move about in the world, and whether, you know, it be a cultural experience or an entertainment experience or a retail experience. I think that's going to be really, really key. We're seeing a ton of movement around wearable technology right now in our ecosystem here. I think that's going to be a big piece. And then the second thing is the further acceleration of the telematic space or the connected car environment is really big right now. You talked briefly about voice. That's the area where we see voice exploding in 2021, is in the vehicle. And, you know, we were just doing a project the other day with Skoda in the Czech Republic, and they've just built a whole LBS offers platform, retail offers platform into the cars directly, and it's all activated through voice and so on. Because, you know, and think about it, if you can order something with your voice while you're driving and it knows where you are and it can be brought out to your car and you don't have to go in, you know, so pulling all that together, I think that's pretty, pretty wonderful experience. So
pretty awesome. All right. That was a great discussion. Could have gone on for another hour, but we said we'd do it for an hour and we're at an hour. So Kim Sarubi, do you want to finish things off here?
I just want to thank you all so much for joining the call and again for all your wisdom and information, and have an amazing holiday. Here's to 2021. Let's move forward.
2021. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Thank you, Kim.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, everyone.